There's a chill now, like when you wake up freezing because you left a window open. John, what do you mean you can't? Are you sick? Are you okay? He exhales deeply, and I see his mind racing to keep up with his feelings. His eyes are welling up. His fists clench. All the parts he keeps on the other side of the glass, as if they could hurt me. And the way he looks at me, I know it isn't a lie. It isn't fear. It's something real. The risk. The closed door. I touch him the only way I can, through the glass. His hands meet mine on the other side. He's crying quietly. John, what's wrong?
I thought you'd be mad.
John, I was never mad. The only way I'd be mad is if you waited until it was too late. But we're here. And life is long. He doesn't say anything, and his silence feels like a counter. No, Chloe, life is short. I ask him again, what's wrong?
I was at your show, he says.
My head spins and my hands press onto the glass. That was you.
You fainted.
The way I did when I first saw you when you came home.
Yes, he says. I think deep down you know, Chloe. I can't explain it. I don't want to be this way. But he did something to me in the basement when I was sleeping. It sounds crazy, but my feelings, when I care about someone, I hurt them.
He looks at me.
Cody didn't run off, Chloe. And Noelle?
My skin tingles. I glance at the doorknob. For the first time, I understand what's happening here. He doesn't have a contagious flu, and he isn't punishing me. He locked that door to save me. Noelle, I say. And it's like waking up after a dream, knowing real from unreal. The cop who asked me about Noelle, a heart attack? And the years in between Noelle dying and now. This is why he kept his distance. When he came back, when he stayed away, this is why. I always wondered, and now I know. And it's as if a new language is implanted in my brain, and I'm fluent without ever having tried to learn. I know it, but I don't understand it.
Chloe, he says. I nod.
You told me how your mom fainted. Your dad was always woozy. That was you?
Yes.
I can't look at him for a second. I'm afraid of him for the first time in my life. I feel like I should have so many questions, but all I can do is picture him in front of his house. Me and my wet head. And how the earth disappeared under me. How mad I was at the universe for robbing us of that hug, that moment, that joy.
He left me this book, The Dunwich Horror. I couldn't understand it. All I knew was that he turned me into a monster.
And just like that, the fear is gone. I know what John is, what he isn't.
I look up.
John, you're not like that. You're not a monster. Whatever is wrong, we can fix it.
I don't know how, Chloe. I've tried for years, for you. And I drive myself crazy, thinking if I had just told you how I felt sooner, if I had been brave enough to say it, this never would have happened. Blair wouldn't have gotten me. And you and me... It's too much to picture him in the woods, and I shake it away. I tell him it was us. I tell him how nervous it made me to feel so appreciated. I didn't know what to do with it. I wasn't ready to have someone thinking I'm so amazing. I wasn't brave enough to hear it, I say. This is how it always was. I don't talk a mile a minute the way I do when we're online. When we're in the same room, we have these silences. We had them in the shed. They're not awkward. They're heavy, sticky. They're us knowing where we're both coming from. John, I say, even after you got back and you wouldn't see me,
couldn't see you, he says. Not wouldn't, couldn't.
Didn't, I say. It's just how it worked out. How it always seems to work out. That no matter how close we are,
there's something keeping us apart, he says.
My hands are on the glass against his hands, the closest we've ever been. The pores on his cheeks, denser there than anywhere else. His Adam's apple, the veins in his neck, the little flecks of black in his eyes, his lashes, his lips. What we want is irrelevant. It's nothing compared to what is. He nods toward a chair. I'm sitting on my side and he's sitting on his side. Like prisoners, which we are. I have to know, John. Was that you in Providence? He raises his voice in song. That jingle for the furniture store, Alex Interiors. I forgot how funny he is. I forgot about the laugh I have around him, the one from deep inside. And then the moment cools. It transforms into something else. That was him calling me. That was also him hanging up all those years. I cross my arms over my chest. He reads me well.
I shouldn't have done that, he says. I just missed you, and I wanted to hear your voice so bad. I'm sorry. I am.
John, I'm still confused. You could have written to me. You could have told me about this, whatever it is.
But I don't know what it is.
But you know what this is, between us.
His hands become fists.
It's the hardest thing in the world, staying away from you. I knew it going into this. I thought, okay, I'll get to see you and talk. But then I have to tell you about how messed up I am and you're gonna be let down, the way you were when we were kids.
No, John. You didn't let me down. I thought we had our whole lives together. I always thought I let you down. I stayed up night after night when you left. I missed you so much. And then I changed. I could feel it happening. And it was horrible, John. It was like a horror movie, feeling myself grow away from you, getting older, looking different. I would look in the mirror and realize how long you'd been gone, and it just hurt.
Chloe, I'm sorry.
No, I say. We're here again. It's like before. You came back, John. You came back.
I did, but I didn't, he says, and I see the pain breaking across his face.
And now it's dawning on me. The expanse of it. The misleading image of him in the paper, on TV, the bold, fresh-faced survivor, the new lease on life. The lie of it all. The half-truth of his toxic, great big body.
I did, but I didn't.
It's dizzying to realize how powerless I was, to know how irrelevant love is when it comes to fate intervening. Is that what Roger Blair was? Was he fate? Did he beat us? My phone buzzes and I'm startled. It's him. It's John. He moved, and he's sitting on the floor with his back against the glass. "Chloe," is all he writes. I sit on the ground directly behind him, on the other side of the glass. My side. I write back. "John." He sends me a link to an obituary of a man in Lynn, and while I'm skimming that, he sends me another link, and then another. This is what his life has been. He's carried these links around. He's waited to show them to me until now. These people he didn't mean to hurt. The reason for the glass barrier. The reason for his tears. The links are piling up, dizzying. The pictures, the loss. I send him a link to our song, Way It Goes, that song we liked, his favorite version. When the song ends, we connect through our silence. I feel his pain, his goodness, the paradox. The boy with the hamster. It's time, John. Let's go. We have to go. We can fix this. Chloe, we can't go. Of course we can. We'll figure it out. Chloe, he says. His voice startles me. I didn't hear him shifting, getting on his feet. I pocket my phone. I wipe my forehead. I lost my sense of time, place. I'm dizzy, like some woman who was hypnotized. He puts his hands on the glass, and I raise my hands to meet his hands. I love you, he says. I love you, John. We said it. We finally said it. The atmosphere changes immediately, and there's an out-of-the-way place where your mind stores things. You can't reach it yourself. It's like the game Operation, and you are the body, and someone else has to have a steady hand. They have to poke that part of you, that hot spot. When you get what you want, what you always wanted, what it means to be you is to want this thing, and now you have it, and there is a roar. Love. We are quiet again. I feel him imagining our future, or the future that would have been if things were different. He's right here in front of me after all these years, and it's the most I've ever missed him somehow. My vision blurs with tears. I stare down at the electric green carpet. Life is short. Life is long. He smiles. You are so beautiful, Chloe. I choke back a sob. It's okay, John. It's all going to be different now. I love you, he says again. And there's something new to his voice, a whiff of departure. My heart starts to race. How can three words sound like goodbye when only a moment ago they meant hello? I put my hands back up on the glass. He does too. And then the door smashes open behind us, and it feels like an earthquake has hit us out of nowhere. I whirl around, and it's him. It's Carrig. He is a hunter, and he always was, and John steps back. And I was wrong. Things aren't gonna be different. People don't change.
If they did, then Carrig wouldn't be here with a gun. His legs are spread wide. His feet are lodged to the ground. His arms are extended, the barrel of the pistol moving from me to John, from me to John. Even that brings us together. The weapon that could kill us. Will kill us.
I knew it, Carrig says. I fucking knew it would come down to this.
John. He's drunk, and he's crying, and he stomps back and forth with the gun in his hand. It's a small gun, a handgun. And that's all I can think about. He has this weapon in his hand. He's armed. Chloe's hands are trembling. Every time she steps toward him, my whole body seizes up. If he shoots her, if it ends like this, it will be my fault. Carrig, she says, don't do this. Fuck you, Chloe, he says. He points the gun at her. You don't get to speak to me. You had your chance. She doesn't cower. She doesn't cry. Carrig, we were just talking. She's telling the truth, Carrig, I say. Don't hurt her. Carrig swings around to face me. This is how you treat a girl? You hide back there in your little hidey hole? What the fuck is this even? Your girl's out here and you don't move? Get out here and be a man! She takes another step toward him. Carrig, let's talk, she says. Let's just go outside and talk. You don't want to do this. You're mad at me, I know. But I also know you don't want to do this. This isn't you. He extends his arm, that gun, that weapon, and she drops to her knees. I could kill him in an instant, but opening that door would mean killing her, too. I loved you! He says. His voice breaks. He keeps the gun trained on her. My heart races and I close my eyes. My options are the same as they were 30 seconds ago. They're all bad. All this power that Roger said I'd have. What a lie it was. Carrig, stop. Please, I beg. You don't understand. Oh, I don't understand, he says. I'm the one who lives in the real world. Always did. But this is no surprise, you piece of shit. Let me ask you, basement boy. You ever even stick it in her? Chloe reaches for him. Care. Don't say that. And now he's focused on her again. Oh, for fuck's sake, Chloe. Can you just see things as they are for once in your fucking life? What are you even doing here? What were you ever doing with him? I loved you. I made room for you. This kid, he stands for nothing. Not even himself. Never even fought back. Just fucking slinked off into the woods. Do you know why the sub grabbed him? Care, please, I'm begging you. The sub grabbed him because he was weak, Chloe. A waste. How do you not see that? The weirdest thing is that I understand where he's coming from. Because Carrig is holding the gun, it feels like he created this mess. But we've been building this together since we were kids. The three of us. We each held up our side of this triangle. I'm the mystery of his life. He doesn't understand why she loves me, how it works between us. Roger Blair is the worst thing that happened to me. But I'm the worst thing that ever happened to Carrig Burkus. Chloe is still trying to get through to him, pleading. But there's nothing she could say that would ever make him happy. Nothing she could say that would convince him that she wants him, not me. She could have married him, but she didn't. Life is comparison, he says. It's choices. Me or him. You don't get to have it both ways, and I want you to say it. She's on her knees, sinking into the carpet. He's circling her. Say it! I see their relationship all at once. How hard they work to make a life, to overcome her feelings for me. How horrible it is for them both to realize what a fool's errand it was. And I feel guilty somehow. If I didn't exist, if I had never existed, if she had never known me, she would probably be someone else. She would love someone else. Maybe she'd even love Carrig. She doesn't answer, and he breaks. Fucking A, Chloe! My whole goddamn life. I don't understand. Make me understand. Why? I just want to know why.
That's the thing about it, Care. You can't understand it. It's not yours to understand.
It's the words. It's her voice. It's something in the combination that puts him in a new place. He's colder now, calmer. He aims the gun at her forehead. I don't breathe. I can't breathe. That's all you got for me? That I can't fucking understand it? That I'm stupid? I don't know how she's able to speak, but she murmurs,
"You're not stupid.
I live my life for you. I go to New York for you. Even after you dick me around, I try. I think, now things will be different. Maybe if I have a cool place, and maybe if I take her to restaurants, and maybe if I get her a ring, and maybe if I get my fucking bonus, maybe one fucking day she'll stop pining for that pussy and be with me." He turns his head for a nanosecond, and she grabs his leg and pushes. He kicks her in the stomach, and she curls up. She's rolled over. She's in pain. Carrig spins back to me now. "I suppose you're judging me. I suppose you'd never fucking hit a girl." He's like a boat at sea, listing, coming toward me. I raise my hands. "Carrig, I'm not judging you. I get it, man.
Don't call me man."
He eyes the doorknob. "Don't," I say. "You gotta believe me. You can't open that door." He points his gun at the plexiglass in front of me. "But you can," he says. "This whole time you hide in there and you don't come out here. This is it, bro. This is fucking it, and it's all we get, and this is how you choose to do it? You hide? I'm out here and you're in there and somehow you're some kind of hero?" I'm sweating, tense. My jets were never this hot. "Carrig," I say, "you guys should go. I was wrong to show up." He looks at the doorknob again. "See, that's the difference between you and me. I'm not winning by default," he says. "It doesn't fucking count when you do." He spins around and points the gun at Chloe again. "On your feet." "Carrig, no. Up," he says. "I'm sick of this shit. I want to see it with my own eyes. Get in there, Chloe. I want to watch. I want to see what's so fucking special that you choose this over me." She looks at me.
"I'm sorry."
He digs the gun into her back. "Go," he looks at me. "Piece of shit, open the door or I open it." He's marching, pushing her toward the doorknob that she tried to open when she arrived. Time is running out, and if he shoots that door, they die. My heart races, and my eyes fix on the glass, on her handprints, on mine, the way they play in the light in the middle of this nightmare. I run up to the glass wall and put my hands where they were. I pound my fists. I say the magic words, the words that will make him point the gun at me, the words that will free her to run from here, to live. "Carrig, you fucking tool, you stupid fuck, I'm warning you. Don't open that door." He shoves her aside and scowls at me. This is what a broken heart looks like. This is the plane going down. This is a whole life of mistakes. Loving the girl who doesn't love you is stupid, and he knows it, and he knows I know it. And this is why he pulls the trigger. The glass blasts apart. I hear her screaming, and there is smoke. I hear his heavy boots on the floor. He goes out the way he came in, and there is blood pouring out of my chest. He missed my heart, but he got an artery. I can't see. I can't breathe, and then I smell her. Even now, I know her scent. Chloe smells like cookies. She is hovering over me. I am blinking, screaming. "Chloe, no!"
"You're dying,"
she says.
"John, we have to get you out of here."
I shake my head, and I feel the tables turning, my jets working fast. She's woozy, she's wheezing, and I'm strengthening. I point at the door. Leave! She is crying. Her little hands are reaching for me, and it's an impossible thing to do, but I have to do it. I kick at her, at the air around her. I pull my shirt up and let her see what's happening. The bullet hole is already starting to close. John, she says, I can't. You have to! But then I remember the way it was in high school. In everything, in every talk, in every moment. I'm the one who leaves, not her. I look at the door, and it's too far away, and there's a force field between us I've never known. But at the same time, it's something I've always known. She's fighting to save me, and I'm struggling to save her, and time slows down. I have to get out of here. I have to.
Eggs. I am just coming out of the bathroom when I hear it. A pop. I freeze, just in time to hear footsteps. Someone's running, and now I'm running. I know that pop, and I know how important it is to run after that pop, to believe in your gut, in the sense you've been honing. Down the end of the corridor, I see the sign, Rolling Jack's Sporting Goods. I smell the gunpowder. The door to Jack's isn't closed all the way, and it's no use chasing the shooter. He's a goner. I see headlights. I hear the unmistakable sound of rubber burning, a man on the run. I bust into the door of Rolling Jack's without a word, without a warning. My gut was right after all, because here he is. John Bronson. He puts his hands up and he's screaming before I even have a chance to take him in. John Bronson, no more beard. Take her! You have to take her! You have to take her now! He yells. The girl, the Sayers girl, on the ground. Is she breathing? I squat down. I listen. The Bronson kid smacks the glass. Listen to me. You have to listen to me. You have to listen to me. You have to take her. You have to get her out of here or she's gonna die. Now hold on. His eyes are giant. I can't, he says. She's dying. I say his name to his face for the first time in my life. John. And he hears me say his name and he swallows his tears. The lump in his throat, the goodness in his heart, his young heart. His shaking heart, his hands on that glass, trembling. He is crying. There is blood on him. Is it hers? He is crumbling and begging, you have to take her, you have to go, she's gonna die, she can't die. He is closing in on himself. He is the beard, suspected murderer, but he did not hurt this girl. He loves this girl. I should cuff him, I should lock that door, I should do a lot of things I always said I'd do if I ever found him. But what good is your heart if it's not open? Your mind, your gut. Okay, I say. You stay put, John. He looks up at me. He nods. I'm so sorry. And then he's crying again. She is a small girl. But everyone is heavy when they can't do for themselves. Everyone is weight. I count to three. John says it again. I'm so sorry, but you gotta get her out, or... I'm doing it, I say. And then I do a count again. One, two... Three. And then I scoop her up into my arms. I am on the move. I am saving the girl's life. The boy's life, too. Already he isn't the beard anymore. He's the boy. The Bronson boy. In the parking lot, I look down at the girl in my arms. No entry wound from a bullet. No nothing. Looks like a heart attack. Looks like nature's way. I think of the video, Bronson getting his ass kicked on Thayer Street, showing up at Lovecraft a few days later, fresh-faced. Fine. How does he do it? I'm losing my breath, possibly my mind. The girl is in my arms, weighing me down. My body lurches, aches, but that's on me, not her. Carry on. Carry her. She needs you, Eggy, right now. Go. I trip on my own shoelace, motherfucker. Go on, Eggy, go. Panting now, sweating, soaked, an old man, a sick man. I run around to the side of the car. I open the back door. Spiraling, heaving, come on, Eggy, go! My gut stings, sings. My knees buckle as I squat, as I lean, as I ease her into the back seat. She's in. She's safe. I close the door. I puke. I get into the car. I start the engine. Go on, Eggy, go!
John. I am in the woods again. But death is different this time around. There is sun in the sky.
There are no leaves on the ground. The leaves are on the trees. Electric green, jelly bean green, slime green. The color of the carpet in Rolling Jack's. I walk on soft earth. It's quicksand that doesn't pull, it only pushes. There is life everywhere you turn. Bunnies scamper and birds chirp. There is peace in these woods. She is here, even though she isn't. That poem from grade school. I carry your heart in my heart. She's inside of me, and she's still out there, in a hospital, breathing and scared. I live in her now, too. She misses me. She's sad for me. But this is meant to be. She will be okay, and I will be gone. We said our I love yous. We know it. There's so much we didn't get to do. I never got to hold her. I never got to be in bed with her. Never got to wake up to her, fall asleep with her. Never got to go to a bad movie with her, a good movie. Never held her hand in the dark. Never smiled for no reason and shrugged when she asked why I was so happy. Never got to answer, no reason, just you. I am not dead yet. Every now and then there is a mist, a red mist. Blood. It brings me back into Rolling Jack's. The floor hardens on me. The quicksand turns to tile. I fight the part of me that longs to live. I tell it to calm down. Life isn't good for us. But then the leaves drop all at once. The electric green canopy collapses onto me, cuts through me. It's below me now. There are hands on my chest, two of them. I'm not in the woods anymore. I'm in Rolling Jack's and someone is trying to save my life, pulling at me, pushing at me. But I don't need to ask who it is. I know. I recognize his breathing. In through the nose, out through the nose. Something I'd forgotten until now. I'm coming back to life, and he's slipping out of it, and I'm the strong one now. I grab him by the throat as I sit up, as he falls back. Roger, tell me how to fix this. He's not breathing so good. He shakes his head. No, he says, his breath coming in rasps now.
I did fix it.
No, I say. You don't get to do this. Tell me how to fix it. There's a string of words dribbling from his mouth.
I see you.
I need you to help me.
I did,
he says.
I made you. You.
I am louder. I need your help.
You're my miracle, John.
His eyes bulge. He smiles. The words snake through my mind. You're my miracle. As if I belonged to him. He mutters again, softer now, says he was watching me.
Providence,
he says, coughing.
Lynn.
All the time I was tracking him, he was following me. It hits me hard. He is close to death, and he is unafraid, guiltless. He is the grandfather who dies surrounded by his grandchildren, his own children, at peace with his contribution. I am that to him, his child, his grandchild. I plead again. Again he shakes his head, proud, defiant. I don't ask the right questions, and drool slides out the side of his mouth as he points at me, locks eyes with me, his words more deliberate now.
You read the book, John? Wilbur terrorizes everyone.
Something like a smile takes over his face. Magnus. I remember waking up in the basement, reading the letter he wrote to me in the book about Wilbur. For a second, I'm not in my body. I'm back in the basement, poisoned by his words, a secret cross to bear, an invisible scar. I walked around the mall, this mall, promising myself I would keep his secret as if it were mine. You're welcome, John. He is the daughter Vine, and I am the helpless host. And now he's trying to turn it all around, comparing me to Wilbur, the violent semi-human, the monster. I grab his collar and shake him. Don't do this! I can't live like this! I can't! He's gasping, but he's driven.
Sure you can!
I want you to fix me! He smiles.
Don't worry, John. You know what becomes of Wilbur.
Eggs. Chloe's gonna be fine. I was right. It was what the doctors call a heart attack. The Bronson boy, he's the attacker, but in a twisted way, a poisoned way where he doesn't mean to be. His heart attacks another heart. The nicest of the nurses offers me a cup of coffee. Thanks, I say, taking it. I try to imagine how he does it, and then I try to imagine how Roger Blair did it, and I sip the coffee. I don't know how people drink this stuff. There are some things on this earth you can't ever understand, but you can know. You can know. The same nurse knocks on the door. Hey, Mr. De Benedictus, they're calling for you. Outside, I'm meeting up with the local cops, going back to the mall. You sure you don't want to ride up front? That's our leader for this evening's activities, the initial responding officer, O'Keefe. Just a kid, a nice kid. I'm good back here, I say. Thanks, though. And I am good back here. Normally, you drive to a crime scene. You don't know what to expect. You're hyper-aware of what it might be. Where will the blood be today? I remember going to see Krishna that night, that morning night. I remember wondering the next day why the beard wasn't at any of the local hospitals. And now, I know. I'm going to go ahead and take the back roads, O'Keefe says. There was an accident up some ways. Best thing we can do is avoid it. Might take a minute longer, but, you know, we roll up in that, we get stuck. You do whatever works. He nods at me in the rear view. Good kid. Also, I'll take any extra minute I can get right now. Gotta memorize my story, the one I told these guys at the hospital. It goes like this. I had a fight with the wife I drove out here. I'm mall walking to blow off steam. I hear this girl screaming. I go into Rolling Jack's. This girl's hovered over this body. Late 20s, male. He's clearly been shot. 2 bullets. The girl goes into arrest. I grab the girl, rush her to the hospital where they confirm the arrest. They stabilize the girl, and we get into this car. And now we pull into the parking lot of the mall. You said there was no gun, yeah? Not that I saw. And you don't think she shot him? I know she didn't. Bet my life on it. O'Keefe picks something out of his teeth with his tongue. He's a chatty guy. You know, she and I went to high school together, he says. She was going to marry this prick. Bronson? Nah, he says. This other prick, Carrig Burkus. I used to be friends with the kid. Worst years of my life. My wife dragged me to their freaking engagement party this weekend. You know, him and Chloe. Now I'm listening. You were there? Yeah, he says, not picking up on my inquisitive tone. I never see the douchebag anymore, but, you know, the wife likes a party. Good news is we don't have to go to the wedding. My wife says Chloe called it off. Booyah, Burkus, you cocky shit. Ah. Ah. He guns it in the lot and he beams. I could tell you stories, he says. Just a rotten seed, that Burkus kid. Beat the shit out of Bronson on a regular basis for no reason. Scoundrel. Used to call me Penguin, like I was the only fucking barrel-chested kid in our school in a Bruins jersey. Real piece of shit, that kid. Solid gold shit. O'Keefe is adamant about establishing the perimeter, closing off the press. He remembers coming here when he was a kid, when John Bronson got out. Those fuckers didn't know how to run a scene, he says. Kids from my school, they were looting the basement before forensics even got down there. Fucking mess. I let him do his design work, directing his guys with the yellow tape, the orange cones. Not a single TV crew is trying to get here, not a single looky-loo either. But time is a good thing when you need to memorize your story. I go over it again. And again. At long last, O'Keefe whistles. We've got a real team now. We've got 2 buses and 6 cars. We've got beat cops staked out around the perimeter. Feels like you should take the lead, he says. I nod. I take the lead. Me, the old guy with the bag. I lead the brigade into the mall. I walk ahead of the coroner and the photographer, the EMTs. I told them he's dead. And the first responders, the picture takers, the glove guys, the ones who will bend over and photograph the dried up frappes. I did this. Me. I won. Me and my gut. I reach for the door and I open the door. Gonna be a bit of a stench in here, I say. As I said, there was a lot of blood. I like the sound of our feet, the gentle stampede as we get closer. I picture myself on the news when I hear that unmistakable rumble of a loaded truck. We make it to the door, the entrance to Rolling Jacks, and the boys behind me back off. It's me. I go first. We all stand by. We all hear the silence. We all know the body inside is a dead one. We all take this seriously, and we all take it together. A man is dead. Dead. My skin crawls. This is how those Catholics must feel, all the religious people. The high of believing what you can't explain, knowing without understanding. It occurs to me now how ill-prepared we are, how unprotected. Nobody so much as wearing a mask. What if his body is starving for life force, juice, whatever you call it? What if it knocks us all down en masse? O'Keefe clears his throat, not in a shithead way. He has a right. This is the job. I open the door. We don't die en masse. And a man is dead. The man is on his back, eyes bulging, skyward, homeward. But I can't look at this man, not really, not fully, because I can't believe what I see. This man is not the beard, not John Bronson. My heart is racing hard and the blood is on the floor, just as I said, just as I promised. But this man is not the man who's supposed to be here. O'Keefe is scratching his head. I'm in the same boat, silenced, dizzy. I can't speak. I can only stare. Detective De Benedictus, he says, I thought you said this was John Bronson. I stammer. You know, I'm off duty. I'm on medicine for this. Maybe I heard wrong. I trail off. I lift my shirt and show my bag. I've never done that before. Can't believe I'm doing it now. But I also can't believe what's on the floor, right here. Roger goddamn Blair. I know what nobody else knows. I know he came to save John. I know John is gone. Out there, alive. I keep it inside and they excuse me from being in here. They chalk it up to old man syndrome. He was walking the mall. He's a sick guy. Cancer. You see that bag? He probably just got confused. He's been off duty for months. You can't blame a guy for trying. He got mixed up. Basement boy, kidnapper. Who the hell can tell anymore? Outside, they bring me a bottle of water, the way you do a cripple. I will never tell anyone about what John can do. He's an innocent. In my gut, I know. That bullet hole. It was closing on its own. He wasn't doing that. That was something otherworldly, something you have to just accept. At the top of the roller coaster, you can't change your mind. You can, but you can't do anything about it. Roger Blair, he's the criminal. That is what I know. What I don't know? How? How the hell did he do it? I won't ask. I'll do what I gotta do. Empty my bag so I don't leak all over. Count my blessings. Eat a salad when Lowe says eat a salad. Crunch and munch with a smile on my face. How? Easily. In my shape, at my age, with my gut being what it is, still, I did it. I saved a girl. O'Keefe slaps me on the back. He winks. Go home and see that wife of yours, he says. We can take it from here.
Epilogue.
Eggs. I'm an unlucky man. But I see where the absence of luck is, in a way, a lucky thing. John Bronson had the best and the worst of it. The right girl, the wrong timing, the teacher who looked at all the kids in the room and thought, I pick you. And then there's what he did to the kid. Boggles the mind. Chloe knows it, I know it, and there's luck in all creation. Sick luck. And it's always a mix. I'm lucky to have Low. I'm lucky to know the joy of becoming a father. I'm even lucky for the pain in the end, because, like my dad said, you don't judge, you're up. I see our boy Chucky for what he is now, our son, a human, born with bad luck. He got the shit end of our genes. It's a coin toss. You never know. You can't know. But you can go on. Low rubs my shoulder. How you feeling there, big guy? I grab on to her hand. I'm good. I'm gonna get the mail. Be thinking about lunch. Jesus, Low, it's 7 a.m. She laughs. We're still in that rounding-the-corner place where every laugh is a relief and assurance. I treasure them all. And I walk out of our house. I head to the mailbox, and we got the usual crap, the bills, the ads, the expenses. But today? Today we also have a letter. A thin envelope, no stamp. I open it carefully, slowly. I see the handwriting, a distinct style, a child's scrawl. He never grew up, not the way we do. Bronson. I don't move. Of course, I look up the street into the holly tree across the way. I let the moment play out in my mind. I prepare myself for what I know is coming, what I've always known was coming. I turn the page, and there they are. The names. Cody Kardashian Bronson, dog. Noelle Moore Schultz. Yvonne Belziki, Richie Goleb, Derry Sears, Rita Bolt, Krishna Pawan, Flory Crane, Muse Frontman, Cat, Warren W. Schmidt, Drew Peter Reber, Thomas Scioletti, Adam Ames, Jared Kunkel, Christian Anderson, Rory Shipper, Eddie Soup Campbell, Casey Waterman, Roger Blair. And there it is, bird by bird. He's a good boy, he is, a good man. It must have pained him to write down those names. You can see where the tears dried, smudged. He cares. He knew I needed it in writing, and I know what he needs. I think of Maddie Goleb crying over her son. I have the urge to call and tell her she was right. We were right. Her dreams were spot on. Someone did break her son's heart. But I'd never be able to explain it to her. I can't do that to John. to anyone, and in the end it would only add to her frustration. I dig up a lighter in the kitchen. I go out to the yard. I throw his letter on the grill. And then it doesn't exist anymore. Lo calls out to me, "How's about grilled cheese and tomato soup?" Sometimes the world makes sense. Me and Lo, the cancer that comes when you skip the doctor. Sometimes it doesn't. It can't. It's life. You have to know the difference or you drive yourself nuts. I won't be in this place again. I am smarter now. Better. I think of Lovecraft's tombstone, Bronson's hat. I am Providence. Sure, we're all masters of our fate. But sometimes you gotta step in. You gotta play a part in someone else's fate. I get into my car. Sometimes you gotta be divine providence. I start my car. Lo pats my leg. It's gonna be okay. Of course it's gonna be okay. But on the way there, we almost have about 50 accidents. I'm not myself, not by a long shot. When we get off at the exit, she asks me to pull over. Jesus, Lo, I'm not senile. It's just easier if I drive, she says. The parking garage and the rigmarole, let me do this. I let her do this. I look out the window and sweat. I want to ask her what to expect. I want to know what he'll look like, what he'll say, what I'll say, whether I'll cry, whether or not it's okay to cry, whether he cries, whether the doctor comes in with you. Will there be one of those double-sided mirrors like we have at the station? Will he know who I am? Will I know who he is? Lo parks the car. I didn't even realize we were in a garage. You okay, Eggie? You bet, I say. Fucking liar. But I owe that to my wife. To whistle and act like the whole ride here I wasn't thinking of faking a bag problem, a sneeze. And when we get into the hospital, the people who work there are pleasant. They shake my hand. They don't judge me for being away for so long. There's a long hallway, which is scary. There is the sound of other kids, other parents, people who know Lo, people who smile at me, meet my eyes. And we go into an elevator, and we go up, and my gut sinks. Lo squeezes my hand. We walk down another hallway. Dr. Alice enters a code into the lock by the door. Chucky's excited to see you, she says. And I know that's nonsense. I know my boy doesn't experience things like excitement or grief. I know he doesn't laugh. I know he can't write a book like Marco or put his hair in a bun or throw a ball or fall in love with a girl like Chloe and get himself kidnapped, fucked for life. My heart is pounding, and I'd like to tell Dr. Alice that she said the wrong thing. I'd like to run. I think of that poem in Marco and Bella's book, my favorite poem, about a bug, I think, and the bug's first trip into the outside world. There's a phrase, off, off, on, stop, stop, and then, go. I told Lo that the poems were mostly turds, but here I am, running those words through my mind, there with me forever, which means I'll tell Lo she was right, assuming I go in, assuming I get out. Off, off, on, stop, stop, and then, go. That happens to me a lot. I hate things because I think I might love them. I know that now, and I think Lo does too. Patting my back. Go. The first thing I see is the red chair. the primary clean color of it, so bold, fire engine red, lipstick red. In that chair there is a child, my loins, my jeans. He sits up so straight. The back of him could be any kid, a normal kid. Bad word, that word, normal. He looks busy, like he's doing something. He doesn't turn around when I say his name. I hesitate, but then I walk closer to that red chair, that boy, my child, my kid, our kid. And maybe I'm projecting, but I think he has remarkably thick hair. I think he's got a nice way of sitting, nice and straight. Did I already notice that? Is that the kind of thing you say to a kid? There is an empty chair on the other side of the table, a chair for me. Do I put a hand on his shoulder? No, nobody likes to be startled. I look over his head, down at his table where he draws a blob of scribbles, thick gray lines, gashes. It's nothing, but it's Picasso. It's my boy's art. It's the lines in the sky, in the universe. Good job, Chucky. He doesn't thank me. He keeps drawing. I am ready now. I walk to the other side of the table and I sit in my chair. It's black. Nothing like his red chair. Hey, you honey. It's so good to see you. Look at you. You look great. He doesn't answer me, and he doesn't look at me. I've been so worried about what to say to him, but now that I'm here, the words just tumble out of my mouth. So, buddy boy, your mother and I, we painted your room. We figured it's about time. No 10-year-old boy wants duckies on his wall. No siree, Bob. I don't wait for an answer. I do what feels good. I just keep talking to him. My son. Our son. Our kid. And he keeps on drawing the lines. Side to side they go, into the gray, over the edge of the paper and onto the table, and back again. Again. Forever. My boy.
Chloe. They're always going to have a name for you, and there's always going to be a they. Nowadays, they say I'm growing down. They say you're supposed to become less narcissistic with age. They look at my new work, self-portraits, and they LOL that I'm becoming even more full of myself. I'm mellower about the criticism after everything that happened with John. They're a little right, a little wrong. They're my they, a chorus I carry around in my head because they almost wooed me a long time ago, when I let go of John, pushed the art part of myself into the ground so that I could be easier for them, lighter, so that I could play Marco Polo with the cutest guy in school. I need them in my ear so I don't forget to fight them. So I don't become them. I do care what other people think. That's part of who I am. And John was never going to care about what other people think. That's not who he is. But being good doesn't mean becoming more like John or regretting the ways in which we're different. He saw all of me, and he loved me. He cut through the woods with his hamster, and I loved flirting at the bus stop. And this is who we were, who we are. For a couple months, I didn't do much but move out of Carrig's and field phone calls about what the hell happened. Nobody could figure out what happened that night. Officer Penguin didn't put the pieces together, the reports of a gunshot, the blood splatter on the carpet. No one wandered into a hospital with a gunshot wound. There was only Roger Blair on the ground, dead of a heart attack. No one knows the whole story. Nobody ever will. I wouldn't know how to explain it, and I've tried to make sense of it in my mind. I spent some time in the library to add a layer of seriousness to the research. I read the Dunwich Horror, and I tried to wrap my head around what John might be doing, where he might have gone. But one day I woke up, and I wanted to paint. I wanted to go back to doing what I do, being myself. I do self-portraits now, the thing most people do when they're young, when they're trying to figure out who they are, who they want to become. When I was young, I wanted to know where John was. Now, I want to believe in myself. I live in Queens now. It works. It's almost a relief to be out of Tribeca, out of that view. You can only get your breath taken so many times. Sometimes you want to live in a shithole, trudge up the stairs, realize you forgot milk. Fuck. Carrig did move back to Nashua. He's a trader and he works from home. There are rumors about him, but nobody knows what really went on that night. No one but me and the old detective. Supposedly, Carrig doesn't go out much, except to hunt with his dad, to pick up weed from his dealer, and hit on chicks at shady bars, bars that made me want to leave Nashua even before I was old enough to go in them. Sometimes I think I should have told someone about what he did. Sometimes I wake up sweaty. He shot John. But I never called the police. Inevitably, they would want to know where John went. I would have to tell them I don't know. They would look at hospital records. They wouldn't understand how someone who got shot just disappeared. Carrig only emailed me once. Address where I can ship your things. I sent him back the name of a storage facility. I still can't get over it. How you can be in a bed with a person, in a life with a person, and then not. His family unfriended me on Facebook. That nice old cop came to the hospital. He closed the door. I told him some of it, not all of it. He said we should probably never tell anyone. I said he saved my life. He smiled at me.
You saved his life.
I think of us on the floor in rolling jacks, back to back. He saved my life, too. I stare at my unfinished painting. I'm 13 in this one. I'm 13 in most of them lately. Same age I was when I lost my best friend, when I picked up a paintbrush. There's a new jar of fluff on the windowsill in my apartment, and there's a jar in the painting, too. I look from one jar to the other, from the real thing to the other thing. After a while, it's hard to tell the difference. And then my phone beeps. My heart becomes the kind you read about in love stories, in poems. This thing that beats for another, not just for me. We're all wired to react to that sound, the dopamine rush that follows a notification. Someone wants you. Someone's thinking of you. This feels good to us. It makes our bones tingle. It's universal. But we all know there's more to it, too. Things no one understands. I trip on my own foot as I cross the room. My body knows. That beep was different, even though it was technically the same as every other beep. Sometimes you feel it before you know it.
John. I'm a paperboy again, but not in Providence. I am Providence.
Magnus was the monster. That's what he was trying to tell me when he mentioned Wilbur Whately, right before he died. He chose the Dunwich Horror because while Wilbur wreaks havoc on the townspeople, he does pay for his sin. What Magnus told me isn't a fix. It wasn't a cure. But it was a reassurance. I had just been going down the darkest road, terrified that I was Wilbur, that my suspicion was right, and there was no humanity left in me. But then I read his letter again. I understood things from his perspective. He was Wilbur, and I was the townspeople. He didn't do well in the world, and he was isolated. In his depraved mind, power would be the inability to connect with anyone. It would mean rising above the need for affection, for human touch. I still want those things, and in this way I am powerful. I am human. I am Providence. My new home is in a rural area. We have strawberry farms here. More fruit, less people. I do my best to keep to myself. A woman on my route left me a 6-pack of beer at Christmas time, but I didn't leave her a thank you note. It's my destiny to be on my own right now. I know it. Same way I know Chloe loves me, always did. You know so much if you just believe in yourself. I just wish I could have been so sure of it years ago, before. After my shift, I drive with the windows open. I play our songs, and I feel a rumble in my stomach. I pull over to one of the emptier fields. I park. Out here, the giant sky cools my jets. It's a blue that's still new to me, the opposite of New Hampshire. Not an ounce of gray in it. I sit in a remote part of the field, and I Google the people I've known. Chloe, my mom, Officer Eggs de Benedictus from the mall. I'm happy to see him doing so good. He looks happier in the recent pictures. I hope I had something to do with that. I left him that note because I think if you have what someone needs, you give it to them. It was almost like we were friends, even though we didn't know each other. Sometimes you just know people for no reason. You look at them and you're friends, even if you never talk again. It's easy. And you know that. It's the same with love, with Chloe. I miss her. She's still in New York. That's her home. This is mine, for now. There's nothing but now. And now, I have to get started on my other job, my research. I'm still trying to learn more about what Roger and Meanie studied for so long, the daughter vine, the contradictory nicknames for it, lover's lace, devil's ringlets. It's a botanical vampire, a parasitic weed with tiny green limbs that stretch around unsuspecting tomato plants, sucking the life out of them. It's hard to kill, daughter. Probably hard to kill my jets, too. I didn't get to ask Roger if that was the right word for them. Jets. I didn't get to say a lot of things. I pick a strawberry, a big fat one. One of my first memories as a kid is being in the doctor's office with my feet dangling off the edge of the table. The doctor closed the door, told us that I was allergic to strawberries. There was something in them called Fragaria allergen 1. It's the reason strawberries turn red. My mom made me memorize those words. She was always so worried I would forget. Strawberries were everywhere. They were at school, on TV, dipped in champagne and chocolate. They're a sex fruit, a love fruit. But for me, they were death. I bring the berry to my lips. So sweet I could cry. Roger Blair thought he was making me more powerful. And in a sense, he did. But the power created a force field of nothingness around me. The wide blue sky, the sprawling, unpeopled field,
not an eye in sight, a voice. If Chloe did appear on the horizon running toward me, I would have to run away from her. And Roger didn't change the important part of me, my mind. I still know how to live in two places. I think most people do. It's the thing that keeps us going forever and ever. You can be the guy in the strawberry field, on your own with your newspaper-stained hands, missing the girl so much you might explode. And you can close your eyes and go into your mind. Be the kid sitting by the girl who smells like cookies. I might see her again. You never know. It's kind of like the strawberry allergy I had when I was a kid. One day in fifth grade, it was just gone. And when I asked the doctor why, he shrugged. Think of it this way, he said. The human body has a mind of its own. Something inside of you wanted a strawberry so bad that you got one. Sometimes things go your way. Don't question it. Medicine is an approximate science. Just dig in. It's true. Medicine is an approximate science. Loneliness is a specific monster. And love? Love is just specific. I sink my teeth into the red flesh, and the juice bursts into my gums. It reminds me of opening a jar of fluff, when the invisible sweetness flies into you, and there is so much of you, more than you ever knew, more than anyone could ever know, anyone except your person. My person. Chloe. My phone buzzes. It's time. We talk at 7 every day. And technically it's not talking, it's typing. But it feels like talking. It always did. I see her name on the screen. The history of all our conversations. Our connection. I feel my phone vibrate in my pocket. The color rushes to my cheeks. I lick my fingers. I fix my hair, as if she can see me. She can't. But she can feel me. And she misses me. We're trying to find someone who could help me get rid of this thing so we don't have to miss each other. Us, she always says. Help us. I take my phone out of my pocket. What happens next doesn't matter. Sometimes it's for a few minutes. Sometimes we go all night. We talk, and I send her the links. She goes out into the world, and she knocks on the doors. She figures out who might be smart enough and crazy enough to believe what happened to me. It's my job to generate leads, links. I'm good at my job. I'm good at being me, in my bubble. I like being on my own. I like to read the papers and click on the words and paste them into the search engine and see where they take me. And then when I finish my research, I send Chloe the links I found. She likes to click on them, to skim the paragraphs and scroll to the bottom of the page and find out where the people live, how to call them. In her hands, my links become more substantial. They transform into connections. Vines. It's a slow stretch in the dark, a lot of secret conversations, tentative shares. But it's growth. It is. There are no kisses. But there are moments where I'm so close to her that I'd swear she was here, in the field with me, feeling the air turn cold, watching the sun go down, leaning into me. She says the same thing. She says she walks down the street and smiles so big because sometimes she'd swear I'm there with her. And this sensation of being in the shed together even while we're apart, this feeling that we're closer now than ever before, this makes us both feel better about the way things are. She says we're a good team. And no matter what happens, she's right.
I feel you in my bones, John.
Chloe.
John.
Chloe.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Providence by Caroline Kepnes. John was read by MacLeod Andrews. Chloe was read by Emily Rankin. Eggs was read by Paul Michael. This program was produced and directed by Kelly Gilday. Text copyright 2018 by Caroline Kepnes. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.